One. Panther. Play. All right, welcome back. It's another edition of the One Panther Podcast. I'm your host, John Ellis. Hope everybody's having a great day today so far. Got a special guest here, one of our favorites in the Charlotte media landscape. He's Nick Carboni, sports director, NBC Charlotte. Been doing this for a long time. He's been in Charlotte since 2016 covering the Panthers and has been doing everything from covering the Ron Rivera firing, the Cam Newton situation, the mess right now with the Panthers, and even soccer right now. Nick, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. Yes, it's all going on. It is all changing by the day and up for big changes in both facets for sure in Charlotte right now.
Everybody's talking about the Panthers right now, obviously. A lot going on for a team that right now has five wins. Talking about the locker room here, you know, this is a big, big deal when you have a coach midseason losing his job. And the players, from all accounts, loved Ron Rivera. I mean, you were there. You covered the team. You got a good sense of the loyalty these guys had to them. What's the mood in that locker room?
I don't think it's very good right now with 3 weeks to go and the fact that they're out of it and how what the expectations were when the season started and now their leader is gone. I don't think it's, you know, all falling apart or anything of that nature. I know Dante Jackson said what he said. I think that kind of says more about Dante Jackson than the team as a whole, but no doubt the week that Rivera was let go sent shockwaves through the locker room. A lot of guys were, you know, admittedly emotional about it. You could tell they were down even after the Atlanta game. They just seemed discombobulated that entire week. Perry Fuel even answering a question of mine this week ahead of the Seahawks game about how this transition has, you know, gotten a little smoother this week. He paused and then added, it's still difficult. And you can tell that it is difficult for a lot of these guys to come to terms with the fact that this season isn't going to be what they all had hoped, and that there is a whole lot of change coming on the horizon. So a lot of guys, you know, every year there's turnover and they don't know who's going to be there the next year, but it looks to be like a lot of it coming in this offseason.
And that was the feeling last offseason too. You know, some had speculated that, you know, it was maybe time to move on there. In the NFL, 9 years is a long time. Very few coaches sustain that level of coaching in one place. But, you know, Ron did have some success there for a few years, a few division titles. He's got a conference record, by the way, 18 straight regular season wins. So there's some bona fides there that I'm sure Tepper wasn't ready to give up on. Did you get the sense, though, that some of the changes that were made defensively were at Tepper's behest, mainly the 3-4, or was this something that Rivera truly wanted to try out and it just backfired?
I think Tepper is smart enough to know to leave the real football stuff to the real football people. Although he, you know, is going to sign off on big decisions, he is going to, especially when it comes to personnel and how things should be handled, is going to make his opinions known. I think Ron Rivera wanted to get back to coaching more in the weeds a little bit and being a little bit more of a coordinator and kind of seeing that after last year they needed to get after the quarterback more, thought that was the best way to do it. Now, doing that, you can, if you don't play it right, sacrifice the run defense. Certainly, that isn't the goal of a 3-4, and it is certainly possible to defend the run in the 3-4.
Right.
But this team just wasn't able to do it. It was not able to take, perhaps, given the personnel that they had here, the injuries, you know, kind of what it seemed to do to Luke Kuechly as a middle linebacker. I think that was all Ron Rivera, and it was his big move in the offseason to fix things, and obviously it didn't work, and now he's gone.
Cam Newton, big, big discussion right now about what to do with Cam Newton. You got one more year left on the deal. A lot of discussion about, do you let him play through that? Do you extend him before that? A lot of speculation about how much value you could get via trade. But in terms of his future with Carolina, do you have a gut feeling on where this is going?
It's hard to. I know a lot of people in the national media want to kind of say that, you know, A, B, and C is going to equal D. And I know that's a terrible algebra analogy, but... It's not as easy for me to see. It doesn't seem as easy a decision for me as a lot kind of outside Charlotte are making it out to be, you know, just because of the fact that he's been injured and he's got this contract situation and they're moving on from Ron Rivera, does that indeed mean that David Tepper will hit the reset button all the way, push it all the way down, which includes his dynamic former MVP quarterback who's still, you know, just over the north side of 30 years old, and, you know, maybe this foot thing was indeed a one-off and not part of a larger health picture with Cam Newton.
Yeah.
The problem is, you know, everybody wants to wait to see what happens when he's healthy, but unfortunately, you've got to make a decision before that time comes on the field.
Right, right.
The decision's going to have to be made at the very latest and probably late spring, early summer on what they're going to do with Cam Newton. Maybe you've seen him out there a little bit by then. Maybe there's some sizzle reels of him running around and throwing at that point. But, you know, it depends. It does seem like Tepper is kind of beginning this seismic shift in the organization on the football field. Does he just kind of cut bait now with Cam Newton, although he may have some potential still, and try to rebuild this thing? But you know what? I mean, you could go a long time without getting another good quarterback in Carolina.
I'm telling you. It's scary to think about it, Nick. You know, just from an observational standpoint, looking at the All-22 and the film, trying to take the emotions out of it, which fans should do, you are going to find a hard time replacing the matchups this guy presents. And we're talking about last year, not, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. Last year, even when he was nursing the shoulder against Baltimore, the number one defense in the league, torching them, creating mismatches, you know, running the read option. My thing is this, you can't help what you can't help, you know. So if the foot thing is going downhill, if the shoulder is arthritic and it's going to get worse and not get better, you know, this is all speculation, but things that have been thrown out there, you can't help that, and it is what it is. But if there's an opportunity for him to continue to get better health-wise, how much fun would it be to see him and McCaffrey and Moore and Samuel together for a few years? It would be a crime not to see it.
Yeah, especially when you consider how good, you know, McCaffrey is, obviously, how much better Moore has gotten, that he's turned himself into the team's top receiving target. Samuel, I still wonder sometimes if some of these deep balls, if they're coming from Cam Newton, hit more regularly, because he is at times getting open deep down the field like we saw in training camp. Yeah, I think I tweeted out, and it was kind of unpopular at the time because I did it during the Jaguars game, which the Panthers won, and I said, how fun would this offense look? Imagine this offense with Cam Newton.
Exactly.
Obviously, as we have to qualify at all times with Cam Newton, you have to say healthy.
Healthy Cam Newton.
Imagine what that would look like. And that's the problem, John.
Yeah.
It's tough to know.
Tough to know.
If he can be healthy to start the season, especially after what we saw this last year, and then stay healthy throughout the season with the shoulder specifically, especially what we've seen the last 2 years.
It's fascinating. We reach a crossroads with every franchise in terms of the quarterback situation, and never has it been this way with Carolina. You know, there's been a transition here and there with Jake Delhomme off to Cam, and there was a little bit of a gap there between the two, and then Steve Beuerlein took over for Kerry Collins, and those were some strange circumstances, but this is unprecedented for this organization, and I think that's what causes a lot of the strife on social media there. Let's move over to the head coaching ranks here. You know, obviously we're looking at an early dismissal for Ron Rivera, and some have speculated that gives Tepper some opportunity to dive into the college circuit and get his hands on some possible candidates there. I definitely would not mind taking a look at Jim Harbaugh, and I know that sounds like the generic thing to say right now, but his track record everywhere he goes improves instantly. He's had success in the NFL in a similar system with similar schematics, and I think he would bring some excitement back to the sidelines. But there's some candidates out there that maybe are lesser known. Do you have any names in mind, Nick, right now, preliminarily?
Well, I think everybody is kind of throwing out the same names when it comes to NFL assistants right now, primarily Greg Roman of the Baltimore Ravens. You talk about Jim Harbaugh's success schematically in this league. He's a guy that did it with him in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Now he's doing it with Lamar Jackson at Baltimore, doing amazing things with that quarterback. Now, you know, do you want to match him up with Cam Newton? Do you want to match him up with a future quarterback that is similar to Lamar Jackson? Or can he kind of come in and lay out his plan for whoever the quarterback may be? You've got Stefanski, I believe, in Minnesota. Harbaugh's a good name too. I do see David Tepper. You know, he's an extremely competitive person,
yeah,
and he's got a lot of resources, obviously. So does he go after, does he try to call Jimmy Sexton to get Nick Saban? I mean, you know, I don't put anything past him. And one thing with Harbaugh is just his message seems to run dry at places after about 4 or 5 years, and we'll see what happens at Michigan, obviously. But it doesn't always seem to take with players after a certain amount of time. But he's still obviously a good coach. I know Mike McCarthy has been kind of bunkered down in a house for a year with five or six other coaches just kind of digging into.
That's a great visual, by the way.
I mean, it's really what it is.
Yeah.
It's really fascinating.
Yeah.
So, I think you have at least got to bring him in, especially because he is currently available, and I believe other teams will start to bring him in. I think the names that are all out there all make sense. Who's going to be the guy that is going to be able to sell to the owner that I can not only coach and win games, but I can build you a program that will sustain success? I mean,
exactly.
Did anybody see that coming with John Harbaugh? Did anybody see that coming with even Bill Belichick after he had failed a couple of times before? So
yeah,
it's tough to peg, and that's Tepper's job now, is he's got to peg that higher now.
Well, and it's funny how it works, because, you know, one team's trash is another team's opportunity. You know, Rivera's a good example. Some of the decisions he's made over the years, fans tend to get a little overworked about it. But he's a damn good coach, and he's got a great track record, and he's taken this team through some very tough times and navigated the waters with not a lot of help in the front office. So I think he's a viable candidate in some of these places looking to make a change. And it doesn't, necessarily mean that, he was a failure here. You know, he was a good coach here. But like I said, 9 years in the NFL, it's a long time. That's a long marriage, and sometimes you just have to part ways and get a fresh set of eyes on things. Leads me to my next question here. Marty Herney, where do you see him this time next year?
We kind of did a segment on TV a couple days ago about who would be here and who wouldn't. I did say that I thought Marty would go simply because, I mean, he is still a holdover from the Richardson era in Tepper's building now, and I think that does affect things somewhere. I have no reason to believe that they don't get along, that they don't work well together. Tepper does give him credit for his, ability to evaluate college talent. But when he did talk to the media after firing Rivera and was asked about Herney, he literally walked his comment back.
He did.
He said he's an incredible evaluator of talent, and then just said, no, he's good. And Marty does deserve a lot of credit for the things he's done here in his two stints, especially when it comes to drafting in the first round. And people want to say, oh, well, of course, he had the number one overall pick, and he picked Cam Newton. Well, there were a lot of people that thought that they should pick Blaine Gabbert and James Walker, too.
Oh, Nick, gosh, you're absolutely right.
For that, but it's hard to imagine now. And that, Luke Kuechly was not the most popular pick where they picked him in the first round. So he deserves a lot of credit. I think some of the picks he's made in his second go-round will be good in terms of first-rounders. It's the mid-rounders that you still wonder about, and those are a little harder to hit, obviously. But Jonte Jackson so far doesn't look to be a starter in the league. Rashawn Galvin has now been cut. I still think Ian Thomas will turn out to be a really, really good pick. Yeah. We'll see about Little and Daly, too. So I think even overall, his mid-round picks may prove to be pretty solid over the last couple of years. But I just can't see him in any prominent role in the building. I'll say that he's probably gone, but certainly I could see him staying around if he wants to, stay in Carolina. Obviously, he's beholden to this place. He loves it, and holds some sort of college scouting position.
And that's great that he loves it, and that's all fine and well. But he walked right back into a cherry gig after being fired mid-2012. And I'm not trying to be too harsh on the guy, but that's almost unprecedented that in the NFL landscape, you come right back into where you started. And I think it speaks to maybe some of the dysfunction within that organization in Carolina. in that 2017 season. And, then, you know, getting back to Rivera before we move on to our last little set of questions here for you. I still think 2017 was his best coaching job. I know 2015 was just, you know, like a whirlwind for everybody. But the amount of absolute distractions in and around that locker room and then in the building, and Rivera was able to stabilize that unit with some injuries, with Daryl Worley at cornerback and James Bradbury at cornerback. Remember, no Josh Norman then. And he took that team to 11 wins, and if not for New Orleans, you know, having their renaissance that year, they very well may have had the number one or two or three seed. But I just look back at Ron and say, you know, his asset was to take some pretty tough times and navigate this team through that. And I think that'll serve another team.
There's a couple different ways you can win coach of the year. You can go 15-1 and have the sparkly record and everything's going your way. Or I believe he won it the year they had to rattle off something like five straight wins to make the playoffs with a sub 500 record.
Oh yeah. 2014.
Is that the other year that he won it?
2014.
Because I think those are the kind of, if you want to prove yourself as a coach, you take teams like that to the postseason under, you know, insane pressure and circumstances, and he did that a few times.
Yeah, fans will tell you that was all Cam Newton, and then some fans will tell you, well, Cam sucks, it was all Ron. And really, in football, it's 53
it's
guys doing it.
Other, right?
Yeah, it's 53 guys doing it, but the focus is always on the quarterback and the coach. And still kind of numb. It's hard to believe Ron's gone. I know you got to know him pretty well there covering the team since, I think, 2016, you had mentioned. What stories or impression, I mean, what in particular will always ring with you when you remember your time with Ron?
I think just, you know, the way he handled the media, and I know he certainly got sensitive about a few different topics, and those caused some kind of, I guess, funny walkouts, because they were mostly just most docile walkouts.
Yes, gentle, right?
you know, I think that even after a really bad loss, he would come in on Monday, and you could tell he was remaining poised in front of that podium, and just from his body language being positive for, and I think that's, and I know that's for his players. Mm-hmm. Because they watch that and they feed off of that. Yeah. And one thing James Bradbury told me the day that Ron got fired was that he was always a positive coach, win or lose. He was always, you know, coaching positively, speaking positively. Sure, yeah, he got on their ass, but he believed in them and he loved them. And from the media standpoint, and it's, you know, Ron Rivera tweeted after his farewell press conference that he forgot to thank the media. I can't think of any coach that would ever do that.
I know,
and
right?
I have a similar story, I know, to a couple of other people, having talked to other people about this happening to them. It was right before that Saints playoff game. It was like the Thursday before, and the Thursday presser, you could tell everybody's a little tighter because the game's just a few more days away now, and right, the questions have all been asked and re-asked and re-asked over Monday, Wednesday, Thursday. I asked them something about how they had success getting Drew Brees out of the pocket a couple of years prior and how they would kind of look to do that again.
Right.
And he gave me about a four-word answer. I didn't think anything of it. I mean, I didn't think anything of it. Yeah, I mean, I grew up in New England, so I listened to plenty of Belichick press four-word answers, frankly, kind of flowery and long-winded.
Yes.
And after the press conference, he had one of the PR people call me over to the hallway that's adjacent to the podium, and I went out there thinking, oh, God, he's ticked off or what, you know, I didn't know. And he just apologized for being short and just said he didn't want to give too much away, and great question, and nice to, good to see. I mean, like, that does not happen between coach and media. And does that matter in the grand scheme of winning and losing? No, but to me it matters that that's the type of person he is, and he treated everybody in that building, especially those of us who were there to extract information 4 days a week. He treated everybody with respect for what they do, and I always appreciated that. And you know, I know that whatever market he goes to, I'll know people there, and I'll tell them really good things.
That's a great story, and I can echo that. I covered camp back in 2011, the first camp they were together, Ron and Cam, and you know, they had the labor strife all off season, so there was no OTAs, and things were sort of a mess and everything was thrown together. So he was under a lot of pressure in his first camp, but he took the time. And again, I'm just a freelancer and a blogger at that point. You got Joe Person and Steve Reed out there, the main guys that are getting, you know, all the attention. But, you know, these guys were great to bring me over and say, hey, you know, this is John Ellis. You know, he's a blogger out here. And Ron couldn't have been just more generous with his time. This was right after David Geddes, the receiver, blew out his knee, too. It was a nice practice, and he spent at least maybe 10 minutes with me, just one-on-one, walking up the field, talking about football. And he was very insightful and very gracious with the info. And I know during camp, this was just when Twitter was starting to take shape. All the reporters were tweeting out everything, the play-by-plays during, and he eventually got a hold of some of the PR guys and said, look, they're giving out way too much info on Twitter. You got to tell these guys to knock it off. And eventually we did.
Yeah, and thus creates the policies that are in place now.
Right? It's a changing world. And then that was right on the precipice of it. But my impression of Ron was just somebody who took time he didn't have to take for somebody who was a nobody. And really just sort of made a great impression. But give me a little bit of scoop on what's going on the soccer front here. I'm not a huge soccer guy. I'll just be up front with you here. My kids love to play soccer, so I'm not as educated on this stuff as you are. You've been covering like a hawk. Give me the basics of what's going on right now.
Well, the secret's out now. So Tuesday, December 17th in the morning, Major League Soccer will be in Charlotte to announce that Charlotte's got the 30th team, and they'll be there with David Tepper and Mayor Vi Lyles, and should be a big party. The thing is that to get this going, the mayor and city council basically had to promise to the league that they would give Tepper $110 million in renovation money and money to build a team headquarters for the Major League Soccer team at the Eastland Mall site. So they kind of did that sight unseen, out of the public eye. They still got to vote on it publicly. So that raises a lot of questions going forward, especially when you talk about maybe getting a new stadium, or I would say definitely getting a request for a new stadium in the next 5 to 10 years. But Charlotte is getting the 30th team, so that means 17 more events to attend at Bank of America Stadium, basically March through November, and another team to root for. And I think they believe that it will take hold as, you know, Charlotte's team. You know, we get all these other fan bases infiltrating our stadiums for NFL and NBA games in town, but I think Charlotte will have its kind of its team for anybody who was either born here or moved in here, like I did. In the last 5 years to kind of grasp. So I think it's pretty cool. I know there's obviously always going to be discourse and debate about public money, but I think it's a good thing.
Nick Carboni, WCNC Charlotte. You can catch him every night. And also on Twitter, Nick Carboni, WCNC. Nick, I appreciate your time, buddy.
One Panther Podcast. John Ellis.